Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today. On the show today, we travel back to 1962 during the height of the space race.
How fun!
The phrase, one man's junk is another's treasure, plays a huge role in our story today. We have a fiction tale from Abigail that I think is quite clever and pokes fun at our gadgets.
Hey, careful now!
Add in a leftover Halloween story, a short one about a static shadow, and a brand new helping of...
Johnny, is this true?
But how to kick it all off?
Ron, how about with a 5-minute mystery?
Works for me.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by Alien. That incredible movie is now 40 years old and deserves to sponsor this story. It has caused more chills than a cold winter night and ranks number 8 on the all-time IMDb list. Now, what does that have to do with this story? Nothing.
Far to the south, hidden in the mysterious low country of Cuba, a sugar plantation house, dimly lighted in the somber dusk. In the parlor of the house sits a small, thin woman.
Lester Lockwood is my brother, Inspector. His wife, Nydia, drove him to throw himself off the riverbank.
Suppose you tell me the whole story.
Well, 2 years ago, my brother and his wife left their professorships in the English department at Lynbrook College and came here to live and write. As time went by, Nydia became fascinated by the native drums. One night, she wandered alone in the jungle.
And never came back, as I remember.
And then the first of those mysterious notes appeared, written in blood on dried bark. I have been chosen, it said, for one of the living dead. Come to me, Lester, and share my eternity. It was signed, Nydia. Lester watched for her, certain somehow she'd come for him. And last night, we were standing on the jungle path.
Judith, the drums, they're getting louder. She will come, I know she will.
Oh, Lester, give up this plantation, it's evil.
It's too late. She's here. Oh. Listen, do you hear that?
What?
A movement, yonder beyond the trees. Look!
Oh, Lester, it is Nydia.
It's true. Oh. Judith, my wife's one of the living dead.
Lester, come back!
I've got to find her and save her from this voodoo magic.
He ran off in the darkness, and I went quickly back to the house to wait. And at last, Lester came back.
I couldn't find her. I looked everywhere.
Then you've got to come away from this place tonight.
Judith, look here on the window ledge.
Oh, another of those terrible notes. What does it say?
You are a human. You cannot know the glory of eternal life. Come to the jungle, to the drums, and share my living death. Keep this between you and I.
Oh, she's trying to destroy you. Trying to, Lester.
I'm going to her, Judith.
No!
Lydia's waiting for me to come.
Lester, come back! Come back!
And this is the note your brother found last night on the window ledge, Miss Lockwood. Eh?
Yes. Others, I suppose he destroyed them.
I see. And you say your brother's wife was formerly an English instructor?
At Lynbrook. She met Lester there.
Your story, Miss Lockwood, is interesting, and I think I know the truth. But the chief at headquarters would rather hear it from you, so come along.
What was the clue that led Inspector James to arrest Judith Lockwood? In a moment, he'll tell us, but first...
Okay, what clue? And why would anyone want to become a zombie? You just shuffle around all day and want to eat human brains. It doesn't sound fun at all. Oh, and mortality? That's a sham. Everyone knows to double tap. By the way, Alien is a modern classic blending science fiction, horror, and bleak poetry into a seamless whole. I'm just saying.
And now, here's Inspector James.
Under questioning, Judith Lockwood broke down and confessed to the murder of her brother and his wife. She was a pretty mixed-up woman, but she had imagination. I knew Judith had written the note herself because no instructor of the English language is going to make 2 grammatical errors in 4 short sentences. You don't say human for human being. And nothing is ever between you and I. So, if you didn't know, let's keep it between you and me.
Okay, the inspector forgot one little thing. And that is, perhaps zombies forget how to use proper grammar. I mean, they've got a lot of stuff on their minds. Or rather, they want to eat your mind. It's a thing. Now, why all these references to Alien? 40 years is a long time for a film to stand the test of time. It's true.
What's that you say?
Well, we begin with this email from Marvin Dell from Chicago. He writes, "Hey Ron, thank you for your work on the podcast. I love it. I have just started following your art for the shows. It is also very interesting. You really have to look to see what you've hidden in it. Like last week, you hid a dancing girl in the snow. Very cool. Is there a way to view the older panels from previous shows? Marvin." Well, Marvin, thank you for your comment. And the answer is yes. If you go to Facebook and search for Ron's Amazing Stories, you'll have access to over 100 of them. Just click on the photo menu item and you will see them sitting there on the timeline album. Also, I've had enough interest in them that I'm creating a gallery in Google Photos and I'll make that public. It will include them all. Stand by for when I make that available. Also, when you go to look at the art, please follow or like the Facebook page while you're there. That helps us a lot. Thank you for your question, Marvin. Next up, I've received a couple comments that while Ron's Amazing Stories blog page is nice, it is dated. Several people have offered to modernize it. I have to say, I like it the way it is, so I'm asking you guys to stop by the blog site, check it out, and let me know what you think. You can get to the blog via the main website or go directly to ronsamazingstories.blog. Drop me a thumbs up or a thumbs down on what you think. The month of Spooky was a huge success. The best numbers in the history of the podcast. We went from approximately 5,500 hits to very close to 9,000 per show. That is fantastic, and I thank each and every one of you that have listened. The cool thing is that those numbers keep going up as more people catch up on the shows. But as a consequence of having so many stories last month, the coffers are bare. I need stories to share, and I just don't have them. Now, how many do you think we presented in the month of Spooky? Well, I counted them all up, and we played 36 last month. That has to be a record. The downside is that we're heading into the month of November without any. I had enough for this show, but I don't have any for next week. So please, if you have a story to share, do it now. I really need it. It can be fiction, scary, paranormal, funny, sad, or even a head scratcher. I'm looking for everything and anything. Just head to ronsamazingstories.com, click on the story submission banner, and let's refill the story bins. Thank you for helping, and thank you to everyone that had stories in the month of Spooky. And now, this word from Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle, whatever you have, you can listen to Audible on it. So, what am I listening to right now? Alien 3, an Audible original drama. Now, I'm sure that you remember or have seen the cult hit movie Alien from 1979. It was followed up by another successful film in 1986 called Aliens. These were some of the best movies for horror science fiction ever, and the franchise continues on today. But did you know that a third script was written in 1987? While it was never made into a movie, the script was leaked online and it became a cult classic. Audible got the rights to it and has made it into a 2-hour-plus audio production starring much of the original cast of that 1986 film, Aliens. It is called Alien 3. Audible has brought William Gibson's script to life to mark the 40th anniversary of the birth of the Alien franchise. Alongside a full cast, Michael Biehn and Lance Hendrickson reprise their iconic roles as Corporal Hicks and Bishop. This terrifying dramatization is a chance to experience the untold story as a completely immersive audio experience. The story begins with the Suluku on its return journey from LV-426. On board are the cryogenically frozen crew that survived: Ripley, Hicks, Newt, and Bishop. Here is a brief bit of what you can expect to hear from Alien 3.
Ripley and I survived. Newt had now herself been abducted. She was deep inside the damaged atmosphere processor, its failing reactor going critical. We urgently needed to make our escape in a spare dropship, which I had summoned from the Sulaco. But Ripley had formed an attachment with the child.
Bishop! How much time?
Plenty. 26 minutes.
We're not leaving!
We're not?
I flew the dropship into the atmosphere processor tower, buffeted by turbulence from the reactor vents. I put it down on an upper landing platform. Hicks was strapped into a flight seat, badly burned by the creature's acid blood. Ripley was taping a pulse rifle and flamethrower together, stuffing other weapons and ammunition into a bag.
Ripley!
I don't want to hear about it, Bishop. She's alive. There's still time.
In 19 minutes, this area's gonna be a cloud of vapor the size of Nebraska.
Hicks, don't let him leave.
We ain't going anywhere.
See you, Hicks.
Dwayne. It's Dwayne.
Ellen.
Don't be gone long, Ellen.
This is not going to end well.
Just keep the dropship on station, Bishop, and pass me the medical kit.
You need bandages?
Painkiller. And plenty of it.
Now you can travel with them to hear the complete story of what really happened in Alien 3. Here's what Audible has set up for us. They are offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you can get your free book today. Thank you, Audible. Now it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Our first story for this time is a work of fiction sent in by 14-year-old Abigail Atkinson. Now, if that's not a writer's name, I don't know what is. To Abigail, I say I think you could have a real future in writing, and you've already got the name. Here is Abigail's story that she has titled Future Gadgets.
Congratulations, Professor.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor, although you should be careful waving that champagne around. There's a lot of sensitive equipment in here.
Yes, it's an impressive array. I'm just amazed that you imagined to secure the funding for a temporal displacement research facility, given the financial straits that the university finds itself in. Oh, there's always a way of funding a project that grabs the public's attention. Big name brands like to see themselves as supporting big ideas. And the big idea is time travel? Ah, well, yes. That is, of course, the ultimate goal, said the professor, flicking a used cocktail stick into the nearby bin. But don't hold your breath. I certainly don't expect any concrete results within my lifetime. Realistically, it could be hundreds of years before. A fizzling noise, a sputter of electronic sparks, and finally a damp plop that sounded like boiling custard. And there, in the corner of the room, wreathed in blue smoke, stood a tall, academic-looking young man with a Mohican haircut, wearing a white-tailed coat over a pink shirt. He blinked twice and peered around the room.
Professor Armstrong?
The entire room gaped in astonishment before the professor stepped forward uncertainly. I'm Armstrong, he said in a shaky voice. And you are?
I's offer the future,
said the young man.
I's the boss Sibbard, o de tempo displace resfac. Me name Oswo, and Professor Armstrong. We been done it, man. We been done the time trav, and I's come back in the historic, where it all begin, to give up the good news.
Somewhere in the back of the room, someone began to clap, tentatively at first, then with greater conviction. Before long, the entire room was cheering and applauding. That's incredible, said the professor, shaking his head. What's the date from where you come from? How long did it take?
I's o da year 1046, post new age,
said Oswo.
And I not stay but a 10 min, else no go back, but I want giving you a view o da futurings.
Post new age? Replied the professor. When is that? How long into the future for us?
Dunno,
said Oswo.
New age, like is o da long back.
So how did you solve it? What was the equation that put you on the right track? But the professor was elbowed aside by the vice chancellor, who envisioned the TV interviews, the bottomless funding, the chat shows, the vastly improved rankings, the gongs, the honors, the fame that would surely follow the revelations that would clearly need to be prized out of this academic halfwit. So, Mr. Oswo, he said confidently, welcome to the 21st century. he added after a pause, and what can you tell us about our own future? What happens to the planet? Do we beat global warming? How do we solve the energy crisis? Who will lead our nations? Oswo shook his head sadly.
I'm sorry, man. I's Sibbard. I's no histobud, no politibud. Don't know the dates, the names, sorry.
The vice chancellor looked nonplussed, but decided to change his track.
Okay, well, you must have some exciting new technology in 1046, whenever that was. Do you have anything you can show us?
A broad grin spread over Oswald's face.
Why show, man? I's got all the mix macca for show.
He slid back his sleeve to reveal a broad bracelet-like device that encased most of his forearm. It resembled a piece of Roman armor and was made of a substance that looked like smoky brown glass. It featured a single blue light in its otherwise featureless surface. The assembly crowded around for a better look.
That's most interesting, said the vice chancellor. What does it do?
It make everything, said Oswald. Looky, I's gonna cook yez a meat burger.
He tapped the side of the device, and the blue light increased in intensity, then ran up and down the length of his arm, and then it returned to its original position, and began flashing a dull orange. Said Oswo.
What's your MZ login?
Our what? Said the Chancellor.
Yes, got no MZ net.
I think it's some kind of network, said the Professor. Perhaps an advanced form of Wi-Fi? No, Mr. Oswo. We have no MZ network here.
Oh, geez, man. Suck yes. Well, looky, I's got o da pen go, Yes, love that.
And from his inside pocket, he drew a slim pen-like object that supported a steel ball at one end and a twisting knob at the other.
Oh, geez,
he said.
The power gone. Yes, got's fusion. Two sects. Oh, depend, go up and run.
I'm sorry, Mr. Oswo. We have not yet developed fusion power in this century.
Oh, man. Geez, no. Size a man. If Reboot got fusion in 1046.
But not here, said the Vice-Chancellor. Look, there must be something you can show us or tell us. Anything. Anything at all.
Size a man,
said Oswald.
But looky, me tenman gone. Eyes just grabbed it like four o' the home guys.
Oswald touched a finger to his temple and a faint whirling sound accompanied by a shift in his eye as the iris opened to reveal a tiny lens.
Smile,
he commanded. And the crowd of scientists, university officials, and freeloaders all smiled gamely as Oswo swept his gaze across the room left or right before disappearing in a puff of blue smoke. End of Future Devices, written by Abigail Atkinson. Well, Abigail, that was a creative story. I loved it, and I thank you for sharing it with us. I think you have a real future in writing stories, if that's what you want to do. I will admit I had a real problem reading the part of Oswo. I hope that my solution was okay. This story comes from Bonnie Hernandez, who lives in Grand Prairie, Texas. She writes, Hello, Ron. I have enjoyed the month of Spooky and wanted to join in with a story. I know that this might not make the cut because it's so simple, but it did happen, and that was enough for me. It was Halloween night, which means that we had already had our share of ghosts, monsters, fairy princesses, and even Batman. I was in my room getting ready for bed when I heard this loud crash come from the doorway of our home. I went out to where it was and saw that my prized angel sculpture had fallen onto the floor. The odd thing was that I had tied a string to the angel to prevent it from falling. And the only way for it to be taken down is by taking the string off by pulling it up and over a hook. There's no way it could just fall. The string would have to be cut or broken, and it wasn't. I didn't think much of it, and the angel was not damaged, so I started heading back to bed. A minute later, my roommate screamed. I ran to her bedroom, and she was standing in the middle of the floor brushing something off herself. I ran to her and asked what was wrong. She said she had heard the crash as well and was getting up to investigate. She felt a cold breeze that sent chills through her and then saw spiders all over her. I flipped on the ceiling light and we looked around. Not a single spider anywhere to be found. My roommate to this day still swears that they were there. That happened last Halloween, and nothing has happened since. I couldn't help but think the whole thing was somehow connected. It was pretty creepy. It left us both wondering what was going to happen this Halloween. Maybe we'll just plan to be somewhere else. Bonnie Hernandez, Grand Prairie, Texas. Well, first off, I sent Bonnie a note to see if anything did happen this Halloween. She was true to her word and said that they were both at a party until way after midnight. So, no spooky stuff this year that they know of. Thank you, Bonnie, for your story. It was pretty amazing, and you shouldn't have worried if it was good enough. Our last story is a short one from MaxSweet302. Sorry, folks, that's all I got. So, MaxSweet, if you want credit, send me your name. Here is the post. Hello, Ron. Thank you for your shows. They are amazing. I have eye migraines, which means I see an aura, but don't feel any real pain. I was lying in bed, and I was seeing shadows moving around the walls, thinking maybe I was having a migraine. I really think I was. On the wall next to me was one static shadow. It was a bit stranger than the others. I was wondering why this shadow was static while the others moved with my eyes and suddenly I felt a cold breath on my hand. At that moment, my hand was too far from my face for it to have been my own breath. I freaked out, ran to my parents' bed, where I spent the rest of the night. I'm not sure if it was paranormal, but it was quite disturbing. Max Suite 302. Well, I would say that is disturbing, Max Suite, and thank you for sharing your story. Remember, if you want me to post your real name, just send it to me. That's it for this time. I want to thank everyone that sent stories in this time, and please remember, I need more of your stories. Our featured story comes from Analog Science Fact, Science Fiction, November 1962. It was the height of the space race, where Russia and the United States were locked in battle for outer space dominance. Stories like the one we're about to hear were all the rage. People wanted to hear about what was out there. However, William Carroll had other notions. He wondered about what we would leave out there. I quote the tagline for our story. There will, sooner or later, be problems of space junk and the right to dump in space. But not like this. The tale is called Solomon's Orbit, was written by William Carroll, and is read for us by Anton.
Comrades, said the senior technician, notice the clear view of North America. From here, we watch everything. Rivers, towns, almost the people. And see, our upper lens shows the dark spot of a meteor in space. Comrades, the meteor gets closer. It's going to pass close to our wondrous machine. Comrades, comrades, turn to my channel. It is no meteor. It is a square. The accursed Americans have sent up a house. Comrades, an ancient automobile is flying toward our space machine. Comrades, it's going to... The picture is gone. Moscow reported the conversation verbatim to prove their space vehicle was knocked from the sky by a capitalistic plot. Motion pictures clearly showed an American automobile coming toward the Russian satellite. Russian astronomers, ordered to seek other strange orbiting devices, reported, "We've observed cars for weeks, have been exiling technicians and photographers to Siberia for making jokes of Soviet science. If television proves ancient automobiles are orbiting the world, Americans are caught in obvious attempt to ridicule our efforts to probe mysteries of space." Confusion was also undermining American scientific study of the heavens. At Mount Palomar, the busy 200-inch telescope was photographing a strange new object. But plates returned from the laboratory caused astronomers to explode angrily. In full glory, the photograph showed a tiny image of an ancient car. This first development only affected two photographers at Mount Palomar. They were fired for playing practical jokes on the astronomers. Additional exposures of other newfound objects were made. Again, the plates were returned, this time with three little old cars parading proudly across the heavens as though they truly belonged among the stars. The night the Russian protest crossed trails with the Palomar report, Washington looked like a kid with chicken pox, as dozens of spotty yellow windows marked midnight meetings of the nation's greatest minds. The military denied responsibility for cars older than 1942. Civil aviation proved they had no projects involving motor vehicles. Central Intelligence swore on their classification manual they were not dropping junk over Cuba in an attempt to hit Castro. Disgusted, the president established a civilian commission which soon located three more reports. Two were from flyers. The pilot of Flight 26, New York to Los Angeles, had 2 weeks before reported a strange object rising through Southern California about 10 the evening of April 3rd. A week after this report, a private pilot on his way from Las Vegas claimed to see an old car flying over Los Angeles. His statement was ignored, as he was arrested later for trying to drink himself silly because no one believed his story. Fortunately, at the appropriate times both planes claimed sighting unknown objects, radar at Los Angeles International recorded something rising from Earth's surface into the stratosphere. Within hours after the three reports met in the President's Commission's office, mobile radar was spotted on Southern California hilltops in 24-hour watches for unscheduled flights not involving aircraft. Number 7, stationed in the Mount Wilson Television Tower parking lot, caught one first. "Hey, fellers," came his excited voice. "Check 124 degrees, vector 62 now. Rising. 124 degrees, vector 66, rising." 9 and 4 caught it moments later. Then 3. Army long-range radar picked it up. "Okay, we're on it. It's still rising, leaving atmosphere and gone. Anyone else catch it?" Negative responses came from all but 7, 9, and 4. So well spread were they that within minutes headquarters had laid 4 lines over Southern California. They crossed where the unsuspecting community of Fullerton was more or less sound asleep, totally unaware of the making of history in its backyard. The history of what astronomers call Solomon's orbit had its beginning about 3 months ago. Solomon, who couldn't remember his first name, was warming tired bones in the sun in front of his auto-wrecking yard a mile south of Fullerton. Though sitting, he was propped against the office, a tin shed decorated like a Christmas tree with hundreds of hubcaps dangling from sagging wooden rafters. The back door opened on 2 acres of what Solomon happily agreed was the finest junk in all California. Fords on the left, Chevys on the right, and across the sagging back fence a collection of honorable sedans whose makers left the business world years ago. They were known as Solomon's Classics. The bright sun had Solomon's tiny eyes burrowed under a shaggy brow which, added to an Einstein-like shock of white hair, gave him the appearance of a professor on sabbatical. Eyes closed, Solomon was fondling favorite memories, when as a lad he repaired steam tractors and followed wheat across central plains of the United States. Happiness faded as the reverie was broken by spraying gravel signaling the arrival of a customer's car.
"There's Uncle Solomon, Dad," a boy's voice was saying. "He gives us kids good deals on hot rod parts. You just gotta take a look at his old cars, because if you want a classic, Uncle Solomon would make you a good deal, too. I just know he would."
"Sure, son. Let's go in and see what he's got," replied a man's voice. As Solomon opened his eyes, the two popped into reality. Heaving himself out of the sports car bucket seat that was his office chair, Solomon stood, awaiting approach of the pair.
"Mr. Solomon, Georgia here tells me you have some fine old cars for sale."
"Sure have, sure have. They're in back. Come along, I'll show you the shortcuts."
Without waiting for a reply, Solomon started, head bent, white hair blowing, through the office, out the back door, and down passages hardly wide enough for a boy, let alone a man. He disappeared around a hearse and surfaced on the other side of a convertible, leading the boy and his father a chase that was more of a guided tour of Solomon's yard than a shortcut.
"Yes, sir, here they are," announced Solomon over his shoulder.
Stepping aside, he made room for the boy and his father to pass between a couple of Ford Tudors. 3 pairs of eyes, one young, one old, the other tired, were faced by 2 rows of hulks, proud in the silent agony of their fate. Sold, resold, and sold again, used until exhaustion set in, they reached Solomon's for a last brave stand. No matter what beauties they were to Solomon's prejudiced eyes, missing fenders, rusted body panels, broken wheels, and rotted woodwork bespoke the utter impossibility of restoration.
"See, Dad, aren't they great?"
Georgie gleefully asked. He could just imagine shaking the guys at school with the old Packard after Dad restored it.
"Are you kidding?" Georgie's dad exploded. "Those wrecks aren't good for anything but shooting at the moon. Let's go."
Not another word did he say. Heading back to the car parked outside Solomon's office, his footsteps were echoed by those of a crestfallen boy. Solomon, a figure of lonely dejection in the gloom, overshadowing his unloved cars, was troubled with smog causing his eyes to water as tired feet aimlessly found their way back to his seat in the sun. That night, to take his mind off worrisome old cars, Solomon began reading the previous Sunday's newspaper. There were pictures of moonshots, rockets, and astronauts, which started Solomon to thinking, "So, my classics are good only for shooting at the moon. This thing called an ion engine, which creates a force field to move satellites. Seems like a lot of equipment. Could do it easier with one of my old engines, I bet." As Solomon told the people in Washington several months later, he was only resting his eyes, thinking about shop manuals and parts in the backyard, when suddenly he figured there was an easier way to build a satellite power plant. But as it was past his bedtime, he'd put one together tomorrow. It was late the next afternoon before Solomon had a chance to try his satellite power plant idea. Customers were gone, and he was free of interruption. The engine of his elderly Moorland tow truck was brought to life by Solomon, almost hidden behind the huge wooden steering wheel. The truck lumbered carefully down rows of cars, to an almost completely stripped wreck holding only a broken engine. In a few minutes, Solomon had the engine waving behind the truck while he reversed to a clear space near the center of his yard. Once the broken engine was blocked upright on the ground, Solomon backed his Moorland out of the way, carried a tray of tools to the engine, and squatted in the dirt to work. First, the intake manifold came off and was bolted to the clutch housing so the carburetor mounting flange faced skyward. Solomon stopped for a minute to worry. If it works, he thought, when I get them near each other, it will go up in my face. Scanning the yard, he thought of fenders, doors, wheels, hubcaps, and that was it. A hubcap would do the trick. At his age, running was a senseless activity, but walking faster than usual, Solomon took a direct route to his office. From the ceiling of hubcaps, he selected a small cap from an old Chevy truck. Back at the engine, he punched a hole in the cap, through which he tied a length of strong twine. The cap was laid on the carburetor flange and stuck in place with painter's masking tape. He then bolted the exhaust manifold over the intake so the muffler connection barely touched the hubcap. Solomon stood up, kicked the manifolds with his heavy boots to make sure that they were solid, and grunted with satisfaction of a job well done. He moved his tray of tools away and trailed the hubcap twine behind the solid body of a big old Ford station wagon. He'd read of scientists in blockhouses when they shot rockets and was taking no chances. Excitement glistened Solomon's old eyes as what blood pressure there was rose a point or two with happy thoughts. If his idea worked, he would be free of the old cars, yet not destroy a single one. Squatting behind the station wagon to watch the engine, Solomon gingerly pulled the twine to eliminate slack. As it tightened, he tensed, braced himself with a free hand on the wagon's bumper, and taking a deep breath, jerked the cord. Tired legs failed, and Solomon slipped backward when the hubcap broke free of the tape and sailed through the air to clang against the wagon's fender. Lying on his back, struggling to rise, Solomon heard a slight swish, as though a whirlwind had come through the yard. The scent of airborne dust bit his nostrils as he struggled to his feet. Deep in the woods behind Solomon's yard, two boys were hunting crows. Eyes high, they scanned branches and horizons for game. "Look, there goes one," the younger cried, as a large object majestically rose into the sky and rapidly disappeared into high clouds. "Yep, maybe so," said the other, "but it's flying too high for us." "I must be a silly old man," Solomon thought, scanning the cleared space behind his tow truck where he remembered an engine. There was nothing there, and as Solomon now figured it, never had been. Heart heavy with belief in the temporary foolishness of age, Solomon went to the hubcap, glittering the sun where it lit after bouncing off the fender. It was untied from the string and in the tool tray before Solomon realized he'd not been daydreaming. In the cleared area were two old manifold gaskets, several rusty nuts, and dirt blown smooth in a wide circle around greasy blocks on which he'd propped the now missing engine. That night was a whirlwind of excitement for Solomon. He had steak for dinner, then set back to consider a future success. Once the classic cars were gone, he could use the space for more profitable Fords and Chevys. All he'd have to do would be bolt manifolds from spare engines on a different car every night, and he'd be rid of them. All he used was vacuum in the intake manifold, drawing pressure from the outlet side of the exhaust. The resulting automatic power flow raised anything they were attached to. Solomon couldn't help but think. The newspapers said scientists were losing rockets and space capsules so a few old cars could get lost in the clouds without hurting anything. Early the next morning, he towed the oldest Hulk, an Essex, to the cleared space. Manifolds from junk engines were bolted to the wheels, but this time carburetor flanges were covered by wooden shingles because Solomon figured he couldn't afford to ruin four saleable hubcaps just to get rid of his old sedans. Each shingle was taped in place so they could be pulled off in unison with a strong pull on the twine. The tired Essex was pretty big, so Solomon waited until bedtime before stumbling through the dark to the launching pad in his yard. Light from kitchen matches helped collect the shingles' cords as he crouched behind the Ford wagon. He held the cords in one calloused hand, a burning match in the other, so he could watch the Essex. Solomon tightened his fist, gave a quick tug to jerk all the shingles at the same time, and watched in excited satisfaction as the old sedan rose in the soft swish of midsummer air flowing through ancient curves of four rusty manifold assemblies. Day after day, only a mile from Fullerton, Solomon busied himself buying wrecked cars and selling usable parts. Each weekday night, Solomon never worked on Sunday,
Another old car from his back lot went silently heavenward with the aid of Solomon's unique combination of engine vacuum and exhaust pressure. His footsteps were light with accomplishment as he thought, in 4 more days they'll all be gone. While the Fullerton radar net smoked innumerable cigarettes and cursed luck ruining the evening, Solomon scrambled 2 eggs, enjoyed his coffee, and relaxed with a newly found set of old 1954 Buick shop manuals. As usual, when the clock neared 10, he closed his manuals and let himself out the back door. City lights, reflected in low clouds, brightened the way Solomon knew well. He was soon kneeling behind the Ford wagon without having stumbled once. Only 2 kitchen matches were needed to collect the cords from a big Packard, handsome in the warmth of a moonless summer night. With a faint God bless you, Solomon pulled the shingles and watched his massive hulk rise and disappear into orbit with his other orphans. If you'd been able to see it all, you'd have worried. The full circle of radar and communications crews around Fullerton had acted as though the whole town were going to pussyfoot away at sundown. 9 was hidden in a curious farmer's orange grove. 7 was tucked between station wagons in the back row of a used car lot. 4 was assigned the loading dock of a meat packing plant, but the night watchman wouldn't allow them to stay. They moved across the street behind a fire station. 3 was too big to hide, so it opened for business inside the National Guard armory. They all caught the Packard's takeoff. Degree lines from the 4 stations around Fullerton were crossed on the map long before Solomon reached his back door. By the time bedroom lights were out and covers under his bristly chin, a task force of quiet men was speeding on its way to surround 4 blocks of country land, including a chicken ranch, Solomon's junkyard, and a small frame house. Dogs stirred, yapping at sudden activity they alone knew of, then nose to tail returned to sleep when threats of intrusion failed to materialize. The sun was barely up when the chicken farmer was stopped a block from his house. Highway patrolmen slowly inspected his truck from front to back, while 3 cars full of civilians by the side of the road watched every move. Finding nothing unusual, a patrolman reported to the first civilian car, then returned to wave the farmer on his way. When the widow teacher from the frame house started for school, she too was stopped. After cursory inspection, the patrolman passed her on. 2 of the 3 accounted for. What of the 3rd? Quietly, a cavalcade formed, converged in Solomon's front yard, and parked facing the road, ready for quick departure. Some dozen civilians, muddied shoes and trousers, circling the junkyard, taking station so they could watch all approaches. Once they were in position, a highway patrolman and 2 civilians went to Solomon's door. His last cup of coffee was almost gone as Solomon heard the noise of their shoes, followed by knuckles thumping his front door. Wondering who could be in such a hurry so early in the morning, he pulled on boots and buttoned a denim jacket as he went to answer.
"Hello," said Solomon to the patrolman while opening the door. "Why do you bother me so early? You know I only buy cars from owners."
"No, Mr. Solomon, we're not worried about your car buying. This man from Washington wants to ask you a few questions."
"Sure, come in."
The questions were odd. "Do you have explosives here? Can you weld metal tanks? What is your education? Were you ever an engineer? What were you doing last night?" To these, and bewildering others, Solomon told the truth. He had no explosives, he couldn't weld, didn't finish school, and was here, in bed, all night. Then they wanted to see his cars. Through the back door, so he'd not have to open the office, Solomon led the 3 men into his yard. Once inside, and without asking permission, they began searching like a hungry hound trailing a fat rabbit. Solomon's eyes, blinking in the glare of early morning sun, watched invasion of his privacy. What they want, he wondered. He'd broken no laws in all the years he'd been in the United States.
"For what do they bother a wrecking yard?"
he asked himself. His depressing thoughts were rudely shattered by a hail from the larger civilian standing at the back of Solomon's yard. There, 3 old cars stood in an isolated row.
"Solomon, come here a moment," he shouted.
Solomon trudged back, followed by the short civilian and the patrolman who left their curious searching to follow Solomon's lead. When he neared, the tall stranger asked,
"I see where weeds grew under other cars which, from the tracks, have been moved out in the past few weeks. How many did you have?"
20, but these are all I have left,"
Solomon eagerly replied, hoping at last he'd a customer for the best of his old cars.
"They make classic cars if you take the time to fix them up. That one, the Humpmobile's the last..."
"Who bought the others?" the big man interrupted.
No one,"
quavered Solomon, terror gripping his throat with a nervous hand. Had he done wrong to send cars into the sky? Everyone else was sending things up. Newspapers said Russians and Americans were racing to send things into the air. What had he done that was wrong? Surely there were no laws he'd broken. Wasn't the air free, like the seas?
people dump things into the ocean. Then where do they go? Snapped his questioner.
Up there, pointed Solomon. I needed space. They were too good to cut up. No one would buy them, so I sent them up. The newspapers...
You did what?
I sent them up into the sky, quavered Solomon.
So this is what he did wrong. Would they lock him up? What would happen to his cars and his business?
How did you... No, wait a minute. Don't say a word. Officer, go and tell my men to prevent anyone from approaching or leaving this place.
The patrolman almost saluted, thought better of it, then left grumbling about being left out of what must be something big. Solomon told the civilians of matching vacuum and intake manifolds to pressure from exhaust manifolds, a logical way to make an engine that would run on pressure, like satellite engines he'd read about in newspapers. It worked on a cracked engine block, so he'd used scrap manifolds to get rid of old cars no one would buy. It hadn't hurt anything, had it? Well, no, it hadn't, but as you can imagine, things happened rather fast. They let Solomon get clean denim and his razor, then, without a goodbye your leave, hustled him to the Ontario airport, where an unmarked jet flew him to Washington and a hurriedly arranged meeting with the president. They left guards posted inside the fence of Solomon's yard, so they'll cause no attention while protecting his property. A rugged individual sits in the office and tells buyers and sellers alike that he is Solomon's nephew. The old man had to take a trip in a hurry. Because he knows nothing of the business, they'll have to wait until Solomon returns. Where's Solomon now? Newspaper stories have him in Nevada, showing the Air Force how to build gigantic intake and exhaust manifolds, which the Strategic Air Command is planning to attach to a stratospheric decompression test chamber. They figure if they can throw it into the sky, they can move anything up to what astronomers now call Solomon's orbit, where, at last count, 16 of the 17 cars are still merrily circling the Earth. As you know, one recently hit the Russian television satellite. The Russians... We're told they're still burning their fingers trying to orbit a car. They can't figure out how to control vacuum and pressure from the manifolds. Solomon didn't tell many people about the shingles he uses for control panels, and the Russians think control is somehow related to kitchen matches a newspaper reporter found scattered behind a station wagon in Solomon's junkyard. End of Solomon's Orbit by William Carroll.
Another great story from a time in history when the space race was the thing. The Cold War brought terror into people's lives, but it also brought hope. The intense rivalry between the US and the USSR sparked an incredible ambition for exploration and innovation that the world hasn't seen since. From 1957 to 1975, we saw the first rocket blast into space, the first man to escape the atmosphere, and the first steps on the moon. Humanity accomplished things that we would never dream possible, fueled by the competition between the two superpowers. I had the pleasure to be there for some of it. I remember that July day when my brother and I went outside to look at the moon to see if we could catch a glimpse of the spacecraft circling the tiny moon, or maybe even an astronaut or two. I can't say we saw anything, but in my young imagination, I was right out there with them. This story brought it all back, and I loved it. I hope that you enjoyed it as well. And now, here is a brand new Johnny, Is It True?
Johnny, is this true?
Okay, I like to surf the internet looking for stories and other oddities. I do this in the name of the podcast, but the truth is, it's fun to see what's out there. What you're about to hear is what I call...
Johnny, is this true?
I will tell you a story and then ask the question, did I make it up or is it true? Let's get started. Have you ever been asked, how's the weather there? You probably answered with fine or it's really been hot. Well, on this edition of
Johnny, is this true?
We tackle some strange facts about our weather. Your job is to decide if I made it up or if it's real. Let's get started. Story 1. The word hurricane comes from the Taino Native American word hurricane, meaning evil spirit of the wind. Did you know that within 10 minutes, a hurricane releases more energy than all the world's nuclear weapons combined? Now, is that fact or part of Ron's Mad World of Fiction? Oh, that's true. Creepy and scary as it is, hurricanes are crazy powerful. They produce an enormous amount of energy. However, the largest amount of energy released in a hurricane actually goes into maintain it. And man, that is a good thing. Story 2. It has been a wonderful sunny day in the park, and you're just about ready to go home. You stop and wonder, hey, what's the temperature outside? But you don't have your phone or your smartwatch. What do? Well, you just listen. Listening to the chirps of crickets can give you a rough estimate of what the temperature outdoors is. Now, am I crazy? Or is this one of those strange but true thingies? If you said true, you got it right. All you have to do is count the number of chirps you hear in 14 seconds and add 40. It's just that simple, and you too can know the outside temp. Back in 1897, a scientist named Amos Dolbear published an article, "The Cricket as a Thermometer," that noted the correlation between the ambient temperature and the rate at which crickets chirp. How about that? Story 3. Peter Mickelson was struck by a lightning bolt on June 4th, 2007. He survived, but not without consequences. They estimated that his body temperature reached an astonishing 4,000 degrees at the point of impact. It was enough to melt his $100,000 Daytona Rolex watch, which, by the way, became part of his arm. Doctors knew that nothing could be done to recover the watch or repair the wrist area, so it was determined that it would be best to let nature take its course. Today, Peter's friends call him the man with the $100,000 arm. Wow, what a story, but is it true? Nah, I created this one from scratch. The only thing true about it is that Rolex does make a watch that costs that much. Story 4. One of the crazy and true things about weather phenomenon is that science can't seem to figure out what causes ball lightning. There are many theories available, but none of them can fully explain how and what ball lightning is. Now, this can't be right. I mean, with science and all, can it? Again, lightning is the subject of extensive scientific study, but we still don't know everything about this immense force of nature, including why sometimes it forms into a ball. We don't know much about ball lightning outside the thousands of reports of people who have been startled by this unusual and short-lived phenomenon. Ball lightning forms immediately after the strike of a normal bolt of lightning. After forming, it can reportedly move erratically, skip the ground, and burn through the surface that it touches. Most reports state that it only lasts a couple of seconds before disappearing. A group of Chinese scientists captured this phenomenon on camera for the first time back in 2012. That was the result of pure luck. Well, I hope you enjoyed this edition of Johnny, Is It True? It was brought to you by Gladys Goodies. Good treats for your dogs to eat. Head to GladysGoodies.com to score some treats and swag for your favorite pet today. Again, that's GladysGoodies.com. And don't forget to use our very own promo code, RONS, to get a 20% discount on all of your purchases. That is R-O-N-S. Thank you, Gladys.
Well, that is the first podcast of November 2019. I want to thank Marvin Dell, Abigail Atkinson, Bonnie Hernandez, MaxSweet302, and Anton for helping out today. You made this podcast a podcast. If you want to follow the show or the blog, just head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find an amazing number of links that should fit every need. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it. And please, leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. That is what makes us grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.